Hello and welcome to Decoding Student Loans, where we will discuss the latest topics pertaining to higher ed financing. EdCap helps people navigate the student loan system. Our counseling program provides New Yorkers with free and unbiased financial guidance along the entire higher education continuum, from tackling existing student loans to helping future students get degrees with less debt. My name is Eric. I'm your host and EdCap Stakeholder Engagement Manager. I'm joined by the Director and Assistant Director of EdCap, Carolina Rodriguez and Nancy Nierman. Today, we're going to answer some of the internet's biggest questions when it comes to getting public service loan forgiveness, or what's commonly referred to as PSLF. Let's start with the basics. What is PSLF? How does it work? And who qualifies? Also, the internet seems to really want a little history lesson. So if you could tell us about who created PSLF, when it started, and why the program was created.
Okay, so I think a lot of people will be surprised to hear that this program actually started during the W administration, so George Bush II. It was, I believe, signed into law in September of 2007, and it was implemented as of October 1st, 2007. And the primary goal of the PSLF program is to incentivize borrowers who are going into public service of some kind to take on jobs that may require significant amounts of debt in terms of getting credentialed, but who take on jobs that maybe offer sort of moderate incomes that would not allow them to pay this debt off in a reasonable period of time. So the types of the, in terms of the qualifications for the PSLF program, it's really about your employer. It's not so much about the job that you do. It's about your employer. The employer must qualify. To be a qualifying employer, you must be either a tax-exempt 501c3 nonprofit or anybody that works for a governmental organization. So whether that's federal, state, local, tribal, will qualify, or other types of not-for-profit organizations that may not be entirely tax-exempt, but they predominantly provide services to the communities like education or health or legal aid services. And the idea behind the program, once again, is to make sure that that people who are incentivized, who will want to go into these types of professions, are going to be able to do it in such a way that they're not laden with debt or a significant amount of debt for more than 10 years. So the qualifications for being in the program, number one, you have to meet the employment requirements. Your employer must be qualified. You also have to work an average of 30 hours per week in one or more qualifying jobs at the same time. And you must have direct loans, and you, for the most part, must be repaying those loans in an income-driven repayment plan.
In relation, I know you said it's really about your employer, but a lot of people are asking, do teachers and nurses qualify? Is that generally the case, or what kind of guidance do you have for those professions?
Yeah, so generally, teachers K through 12 will qualify, and higher education professors to some extent. But teachers K through 12 will generally qualify because most often their employers are going to be local school districts, which is considered a governmental organization. Teachers at charter schools will qualify as well as some people who work for private schools may qualify because private schools can be not-for-profit organizations. So teachers generally qualify. Nurses very often qualify too, because they're generally working at hospitals, which are some kind of governmental organization or not-for-profit. And then there's a whole host of a range of other types of employment that will qualify, such as if you're a legal aid attorney, or if you are working for a legal services organizations, not necessarily in an attorney capacity, but maybe as a paralegal. Or even in just an administrative role at any types of these organizations. If you have student debt, you're working the number of hours and your employer qualifies, then you will qualify.
This is an interesting question we're seeing. Can you get PSLF twice? And I think my assumption is somebody goes to school, they work in the public sector, they get PSLF, and then they go to school again. Is it theoretically possible?
It's theoretically possible. It would still take you quite a long time to do that. What you should know about the PSLF process is that they assess your qualifying payments based on a loan-by-loan basis. So you might have loans that were dispersed. Let's say you had loans that were dispersed in 2020. You would earn PSLF on those loans in, let's say, 2030, if you did your 10 years of employment. If you had another loan that was dispersed in 2025, it's going to take you 10 years from the date that that loan was dispersed or went into repayment before you get enough credit to have the loan forgiven through the PSLF process.
Gotcha. And to confirm for, you know, anybody listening, to get PSLF, you need 10 years of qualifying monthly payments, right, under an income-driven repayment plan. Am I getting that correct?
With direct loans. On your direct loans. Under yes. Some payments in the standard 10-year fixed plan will count towards PSLF. But remember, with the 10-year standard fixed plan, if you remain in that plan throughout the life of the loan, you will have paid the entire balance off.
Right.
That's the nature of that plan. So at some point, you may be able to earn a little bit of credit through the 10-year standard fixed plan, but at some point you're going to have to transition into an IDR plan to finish it out.
Gotcha. And then last question here, some people are asking, how much does it pay or forgive?
So this is an important question, particularly for teachers, and I'll explain why in a minute. PSLF forgives whatever your balance is at the time that you receive it. So it's kind of an all or nothing thing. You don't get any forgiveness while you're earning the credit, but once you have enough credit, anything that's still remaining as a balance is forgiven. And the reason that this is particularly important for teachers, and I'll just mention this now, is because there is something called teacher loan forgiveness, mm-hmm. which is a different program, which is only for teachers teaching K through 12. It's not for professors, where you can potentially earn forgiveness in 5 years, after 5 years of service. But it only forgives a maximum of $17,500. And to get the $17,500, you have to be teaching certain subjects like math, science, or special education. For everybody else, it's only $5,000. Now, you can do teacher loan forgiveness and PSLF, but you can't do them at the same time, which means that if you were trying to get your teacher loan forgiveness first, you'd have to do the 5 years of service, get whatever forgiveness you get from that, whether it's $5,000 or $17,500, and then start your PSLF count at that point, which would take you another 10 years. So all in all, it would take you 15 years to get your entire debt forgiven, whereas if you just pursue PSLF, in 10 years, you would have the entire debt forgiven. So the key here is, what's your debt balance? If your debt balance is high, if you've got $50,000, $60,000, $100,000 worth of debt, you don't really want to bother with teacher loan forgiveness to get $17,500 worth of debt forgiven and then take another 10 years to get the rest of your balance forgiven. Conversely, if you have a relatively small amount of debt, so $20,000 or less, you might consider teacher loan forgiveness because you might be able to get the bulk of it forgiven in a shorter period of time.
Got it. Okay. Moving on, what is the biggest mistake or misconception people have about the PSLF program?
I think this is true now, and it was true before a lot of the more flexible rules went into effect with public service loan forgiveness. And the assumption is that you simply work for 10 years in a nonprofit government agency, and magically you might fill out a form and then your loans get forgiven. And as my colleague Nancy mentioned, there are actually specific requirements, right? Like the employment requirement, making sure you're paying in an income-driven repayment plan, like SAVE for most borrowers. And I think critically for people who are pursuing the program, they should start as soon as possible tracking their progress towards PSLF. You want to know where you stand to make sure that you're meeting each of the eligibility requirements so you're not caught off guard 10 years later thinking that you're just like going to report somewhere, or that the government is going to know that you've been working for a qualifying employer and that they're just magically going to disappear your loans. That doesn't happen. Again, don't assume that just because you're working in a nonprofit or government agency that you're just going to qualify. You want to make sure you qualify and you track your progress.
And I believe there's a tool, right, to see if your employer, your current employer, actually qualifies for the program, right?
Yes, there's some great tools now available, which were not available when the program first started and for like the first decade. One of them is the PSLF employer search tool, and you can literally Google it, and all you will need is the employer's federal EIN number, which you can find in a W-2, or you can go to HR and ask for it. You would enter it there, and then it will tell you whether it's eligible or not. Now, if it comes out that it doesn't know whether it's eligible, you can follow up with FSA and submit additional paperwork if you think the employer should be eligible. But that is a great way to start and make sure that your employer qualifies.
Got it. The next question on people's minds is where to send their PSLF forms. Can you tell us about the employment certification form and any tips or tricks to help people ensure that they get forgiveness?
Yeah. So the PSLF employment certification form is the best way for you to track your progress towards PSLF, and you want to complete that for every qualifying employer you've had since 2007 up until now. And there's actually another tool for that, and it's the PSLF ECF employer tool that you would have to sign in using your FSA ID over at studentaid.gov, and you can also Google this. And it's kind of like a form that guides you through the entire process. You will need to know a few pieces of information. Again, your employer's EIN number, your start employment date. If you're still working with that employer, obviously you won't have an end date, but if you have information from previous employers, you will need the start date and the end date. And most importantly, you will need to know who's signing off on that form. Your employer, whether current or former, has to sign off and verify that you actually work, the number of hours that you're saying you work with them in order for that form to be processed. Right now, there's a little bit of a PSLF ECF freeze. In other words, the Department of Education, FSA, is not processing those forms. Those forms were previously processed by a servicer known as Mohila. They put a freeze from May to July. In July, that process is going to be handled by Federal Student Aid. But at this point, we recommend that if you want to get ahead and file the form, you should use the PSLF help tool and file it electronically. There is a PDF paper application that traditionally you can use. You can find on studentaid.gov. I would say avoid it for now and potentially the future, because the easy way is to do it through the online tool. So there's that information in the system, and it gets processed once PSLF form processing resumes.
Can I just add one thing to that? So for some people that maybe you've got older previous employers, you may not have all the information available to do the electronic signature. If you want to use the manual version of the form to go and collect the signatures, you can do that right now, but you want to hang on to those forms, because there's really at this point no way to submit a manually signed forms while they transition from Mohila to the Department of Education. So you just want to, if you need to collect that information, because maybe you've never filed one of these forms before and you need to go way back, and it's just not going to be feasible for you to do it with an electronic signature, you can do it with a manual signature, collect the form, hang on to it sometime in July when the new procedure is set up on Federal Student Aid. You should be able to upload that form at that point.
Got it. And to be clear, it's best practice to submit an employment certification every year, correct? Yes.
So thank you for bringing that question, because I think that's another big misconception that people assume that they file the form once and they're still working for the same employer and the government magically is going to know that they're still working there and give them an updated payment count. That is not the case. In order for you to get an updated payment count, you must submit that same form. Again, we recommend every year, because the government is going to use the employer's signature date to give you credit up to that date. So again, you want to keep track of your progress. And for your current employer, you want to submit that form annually.
Got it. And so when you're in your like 10th and final year of PSLF, you basically want to submit that right once you've met your 120 payments. So you don't want to do it earlier in that year. It would be literally right after you meet 120 payments. Is that right?
That is correct. You want to make sure that you're done with the 10 years. If possible, I would recommend like maybe wait one more month extra if you can. The one thing that I do want to point out as part of a requirement is that you must submit that form while you're still employed with a qualifying employer. If you do not do that, even if you've met the 10 years, you may not get PSLF until you find another qualifying employer and submit that form. It doesn't make sense. I get it. But again, do not just say I'm quitting and not fill out that form and submit it. Submit it first and then figure out when to quit. Gotcha. Because you don't want to miss out, especially if you're done with PSLF.
Right. Okay. Wow. That's good advice. And then moving on, we were sort of touching on this already. On May 1st, all PSLF processing was temporarily halted at Mohila, as those functions, as you said, are being transitioned to federal student aid and are expected to resume there in July. Can you tell us what that means for borrowers with Mohila and what that might mean for those with other loan servicers who might pursue PSLF in the future?
So the big change here is that up until this point, there has always been a designated servicer that managed the PSLF program. So prior to Mohila, it was an organization called FedLoan. Several years ago, Mohila took over from FedLoan, and they've been doing it ever since. This transition is kind of a major structural change, because what the government is saying now is that the qualifying payment count is now going to be managed directly by the Department of Education. And I think, truth be told, the Department of Education was probably doing most of the counting anyway behind the scenes, and the servicer was the conduit to the public. But they're basically cutting the servicer out of this process at this point. And everything that you do regarding your public service loan forgiveness qualifying payment count is now going to be done directly with the Department of Education through your federal student aid account at studentaid.gov. So what they're saying is starting in July, you will have a PSLF dashboard on your studentaid.gov account. So this is also a good, warning for everybody. Anybody that has not set up an account on studentaid.gov, you want to make sure you're doing that if you're pursuing PSLF. And on that dashboard, there's going to be a tracker. Presumably, there's going to be a way to upload some of the manual forms. I mean, we don't know because we haven't seen it yet. True. But all the functionality that was previously at Mohila is being transitioned now to the Department of Education. That's the most significant change here. And what that also means that in the past, in order for you to even start a qualifying payment count, you had to have your loans at Mohila or at the PSLF servicer. So if your loans weren't at the PSLF servicer, you would have had to have filed one of these PSLF certification forms or consolidate them and request Mohila and get them over there before you could even get a qualifying payment count. That's going to be unnecessary going forward. So it doesn't matter if your loans are at Advantage, at Financial, Mohila, Nelnet. Those servicers are not going to be part of this process. It's all going to be done by the Department of Education. So you don't have to take that extra step, which for some people became sort of an impediment if they had difficulty getting their loans from one servicer to the next. So that's going to be kind of an improvement. Okay. Once this is all set up.
Got it. Okay. More to come on that front for sure. Moving on to another big question on the internet. Can you backdate PSLF? This may tie into the new PSLF buyback program. Can you let us know about the potential to backdate and this new buyback program?
Okay, so I think the question backdate is, can you get potentially retroactive credit towards public service loan forgiveness? I'll just mention quickly that up until last month, we didn't have an issue in terms of getting retroactive credit because there was a temporary program called the Income-Driven Repayment Account Adjustment that basically was giving people retroactive credit without them having to do much other than have the right type of loans, etc. There are new rules in place that are, in effect, through the buyback program, but they're very specific, and I wouldn't count on it as being the solution. I think people should be proactive and try to meet the program requirements to even avoid having to use it, but it's available. And the buyback program, and Nancy can chime in a little bit more, basically says if you are at the 120, but for some payments that didn't qualify, because you were not in the right repayment plan, but you still have to have the correct employment, then we'll allow you to pay back the amount that you would have paid and we'll give you credit. There are some caveats there because you cannot buy back if your loans were in an in-school deferment, right? If your loans were in default. So the number of months that you can buy back still have specific requirements to be met, right? And again, you cannot buy back months where you were not working for a qualifying employer. And you must be at the 120, but for those extra months. So that's something that a lot of people were looking forward to being able to get credit. And some of them realized, like, well, it's very specific, and they unfortunately cannot buy back some of the months that they thought they would be able to. So keep that in mind. There's tons of information about the buyback program and how it works on studentaid.gov.
Okay. And I think that our general guidance at this point is the IDR account adjustment that Carolina mentioned, which sort of the last day to consolidate for that was April 30th. And it's going to take them several months to consolidate all the people that need to be consolidated and then go and give people their retroactive counts. We expect that to happen sometime later this year. You probably don't want to embark upon a PSLF buyback until you get the results of the IDR account adjustment, because the IDR account adjustment is going to take care of the majority of the retroactive credit. And they may not even be processing these PSLF buybacks until they see the results of the IDR account adjustment, because they don't want to do extra work by having to buy back periods that are going to be accounted for during the account adjustment. So this is going to be a tool that's going to be more helpful sort of in the future. After the IDR account adjustment is all done and people kind of fully understand and see what they've got and what they may be missing.
Got it. Moving on, a lot of people are curious about the future of the program, so I'm going to ask you to look at your crystal ball here on some of the next questions. We're seeing questions about forgiveness, if it will be taxed someday. We'll start there. Will the program be taxed in the future? Right now, it's not at the federal level, at least, correct?
Oh, it's not at the federal level, and in a lot of states, it's not either. In New York State, they conform to federal rules, so in New York State, it's not taxable at the state level either. I want to point out that I do not have a PSLF crystal ball, you know, contrary to popular belief. I don't. I mean, there's always somebody that wants to tinker with this program. There may be a faction out there that is interested in trying to tax forgiveness in this program. I know of no immediate plans to make that happen. That would be an act of Congress, frankly.
Right. So under the current law, PSLF will never be taxed.
Not taxable at the federal level.
Unless they pass a new law.
Right, correct.
Okay. And I think that's something important to remember, that PSLF, it's in statute. And the last time Congress agreed on anything, especially the Higher Education Act and reauthorizing it was like years. So I think in my mind, not to say that things cannot happen, PSLF is probably one of like the more solid programs. And I am actually really hopeful, because the last few years have been amazing to be able to see so many people qualify for the program, where before all this recent changes, it was like 1% of people qualifying for the program.
And for years, the program enjoyed bipartisan support.
Yeah.
You know, politics are a little bit different now. So, but still, I agree with Carolina that it would be a heavy lift for them to undo PSLF, and frankly, contrary to the benefit of the country. I mean, there are about 25% or so of employable adults in the United States are employed in either the government or some kind of public service type of job. Probably more than 25% if you include all the nonprofits as well.
Yeah,
that's a big chunk of people doing really important work. Vital work for communities and for communities, and to take away this incentive to allow people to actually work these jobs and have a manageable debt balance would be very detrimental to the economy.
Right, and I think there's a lot of misconceptions or just different views about the program that I did want to touch on. I think some people might view as unfair. I think generally the gist of the program is that we want highly qualified, educated public servants. And to do that, it costs quite a bit of money to get the schooling right. these days with the just the ballooning size of the tuition that we're seeing to go to school. So really the only way to be able to become a highly qualified public servant, you have to take on a lot of debt. And if you go in the public service, you don't get a lot of money. So it's really the only way to make that work for most nonprofit government employees if we want highly skilled, qualified.
That's absolutely 100% correct.
Yeah.
So, you know, you take that program away, what's going to happen to your teachers? What's going to happen to your nurses, your social workers, your anybody that works for legal aid organizations? You know, that is all going to be severely impacted by not having that program available.
Yeah, also add that, like, you know, sometimes we hear about stories or opposition saying, well, why should taxpayers be burdened by this, right? I can tell you that, again, your public sector government employers are your taxpayers, right? Mm-hmm. And the impact is not just on that employee or that individual. It's the impact it's household-wide, right? Mm-hmm. If you are the head of household providing for your family, it's student debt is not just impacting me on a personal level. It's impacting an entire family unit. And to think that you can get an education gift back in a sector that needs it and be able to manage this debt, it takes 10 years to benefit from this program. 10 years are very critical professional years that people are still giving up a lot to be able to qualify, right? They're potentially forgoing other higher earning jobs that might never come back to them as opportunities, right? So it's an entire decade that it's still a big sacrifice to be burdened by this debt. And as Nancy mentioned, yet people do it because they're passionate about it. They're committed to the work. And we want to continue to foster that.
Yep. And I've had clients tell me after receiving their public service loan forgiveness that they now can continue in the jobs that they love, because some people feel that this is a disincentive then for people continuing right. in public service. But I've had a whole host of clients saying, well, you know, I'm now without this debt burden, I can now afford to continue with this job that I really like, that's vital, that is, you know, providing real services to people. And it's having a real impact without worrying about, you know,
the debt
right. and the extra expense.
Right. And I think that leads sort of to one of these crystal ball questions, but I think we've answered it. But just to reassure people, we're seeing questions on online, will it end or be cut? And I think people can be pretty confident that the program is here for the long haul, and that people should be confident in entering into public service and that the program will be there for them.
I think so. And I always say, well, what's the alternative? Go with what's available to you right now. Fingers crossed. I will say the program can be there. How it's administered can have a big impact, right? So all I can say, take advantage of it. Follow through. Do what you must do. And don't forget to hold your representatives accountable for the programs that matter to you. I think that's the best way for people to find relief long term and make sure that it's working for everyone.
Yeah. And last question, again, about the future. This one's an interesting one. Some people are asking if the time in service might be reduced to just 5 years.
So I wouldn't necessarily hold your breath for that one. you have to remember that they've, in the last year or so, they've implemented some significant long-term fixes to PSLF in addition to the one-time IDR account adjustment. They've changed some of the rules permanently that's going to make the program a little bit fairer and make it more accessible to individuals. Right now, of course, you know, we're months away from an election, and there is just no time, frankly, for the current administration to embark on any more significant changes, and that would be a very significant change right. at this point. What the next administration will do, it depends on who that is.
Yeah.
So we'll have to wait and see.
And I would imagine it also kind of relates to what we were saying, you know, this is statute, it's law. Yeah. Is the 10 years, is that a, that is in?
It's a permanent law. Requirement.
I see. Yeah. So, I mean, that would require, again, an act of Congress for yes. the time to
yeah,
change.
I don't see that yeah. changing. Yeah.
Okay. Yep.
In my opinion.
Yep. So 10 years.
10 years.
But 120 monthly payments while working for.
You know, fair enough. 10 years is sort of considered to be a reasonable period of time to have to pay your student debt.
for sure.
As opposed to 20 or 25 or 30. So.
Okay. As opposed to a lifetime.
Or a lifetime. Right. Yeah.
That's the end of my questions there. Is there anything else you want to let student loan borrowers or future PSLF pursuers out there know about the program or anything else?
Just to understand that it's not a program that you immediately enroll in. It's a program that you accumulate qualifying payment credit towards. So the key is you should understand the requirements for making sure you're getting those monthly qualifying payments. So go to Federal Student Aid, Google Public Service Loan Forgiveness, read about the program requirements so that you're well informed about what you need to do to make sure you're on track. And there's a lot more information now than there ever was. Certainly when the program first started, there was virtually nothing out there that people could point to figure this all out. There's a lot of information about it. There are tools to monitor your progress. So it should be a little bit easier. And of course, you can always reach out to EdCap and we can certainly walk through it individually with you as well.
To put this all into perspective, I sat down with someone who recently received public service loan forgiveness to understand how the program worked for them.
My name is Flor Ramirez. I am originally from the Dominican Republic. Although born here, I came to live in the United States around 18 years old and studied business economics as an undergrad, a master's in public administration, and then law school. I'm currently an associate supervising attorney for CHAMP, which is New York State's Ombudsman for Substance Use and Mental Health Disorder.
Okay, great. Can you tell us a little bit about what higher education means to you? You've clearly done a lot of higher ed, so what has that experience been like and what does it mean for you?
It means an opportunity. I am the first generation student in my family to achieve higher education, and it means, so the meaning, it's an opportunity to help myself and my family, including my mother, who you know, did not get to do what I did.
What was that experience like, do you think, compared to maybe some of your peers who had family members go to school? How did you kind of navigate that experience?
Sure. So the difference was that I didn't have the financial supports that some of my peers had. And so most of my undergrad and postgraduate studies meant that I had to sort of like find ways to finance that education.
Got it. How much student debt did you have when you first entered repayment?
$200,000.
That's a lot of money. Yeah. How did you view your student debt kind of once you finished your studies and you entered into repayment? How was it impacting you?
It was impacting me financially and emotionally. I just didn't know how I could possibly repay that back. I'm a public interest attorney. My background has been always in public interest, and the income generated could not possibly address such a high debt.
Right. And then enters PSLF, right? Public Service Loan Forgiveness, which probably was a lifeline. How did you hear about the program? Did you know about it when you went to school, or what was that like?
I learned about it when I was getting my master's in public administration. And so I knew then that that would be perhaps an opportunity to dedicate myself to something that I was passionate about, which is public service, helping others. And then at the same time, hopefully getting some, relief, debt relief in the future.
What did your PSLF journey look like? What was it like navigating that program?
Initially, it was, it was very complicated, filled with barriers. I had to do paper forms and contact employers get signatures, wet signatures over and over again. I think we did it once a year, and I was always anxious to make sure that I was getting those forms submitted on time and that I was getting credit towards, hopeful, future forgiveness.
Right. Did you feel like the program requirements were clear, or was it confusing?
No, it was really confusing. And I think that the fact that I've always sort of like worked in an area that requires sort of like figuring out how to navigate different barriers helped me a bit. And I tried to stay organized as much as possible and read on it, but it required a lot of research on my part. And you know, hearing from others that it was never going to happen, that it was never going to actually look like real debt forgiveness. So
you had to put a lot of faith in the program that it
was. Yes, well, it was the only hope, right? And so I said, well, if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out, but maybe it will. And so I stayed on in the line of public service, as opposed to going to private practice and perhaps being able to earn more. But, you know, it wasn't something that I was passionate about, since I wanted to become a mom and right. create a family.
Do you think PSLF is a good way to help people get in public service and stay in public service?
I think so. I really do. I think that the truth is that public service doesn't pay competitively. And so it's really difficult when you pursue a law degree, for example, to say, I'm going to go work like I did for a domestic violence nonprofit organization when the pay was really not competitive. But, you know, I think that was the benefit of that was that I was hopeful that, you know, I was still getting credit for my 10 years of service or 120 payments.
Yeah. It really seems like kind of an important path for a lot of people, right, who want to have, you know, a high degree and do something that's specialized and purposeful, but also, you know, give back. Right. And it's the only way if you don't have a lot of financial support from, like, you know, a wealthy family to go right, to school. Yeah. But then also if you want to do something that's, you know, helpful to the community.
Right, right, absolutely.
So I understand you received student loan counseling from EdCap along this journey. What was that experience like?
So I when the public health emergency ended and student payments were going to start, repayment would soon start. I had married and I had two kids and recently bought a house. And as you can imagine, the thought of having to make repayments on $200,000 was really scary and stressful. And I then reached out to EdCap, which was amazing, and received counseling from one of you guys. I was able to get my affairs in order. I was able to consolidate my loans and able to meet the 120 payments.
What would you say the biggest benefit of having EdCap on your side while you pursued PSLF? What was the biggest kind of benefit there?
I mean, it was critical. I think that one of the reason why I had so much debt was the lack of understanding of how things worked. I just didn't know any better starting from undergrad, as an 18-year-old starting undergraduate schools. And so accumulating that debt on top of a master's in public administration and then on top of that doctorate degree was, it was a lot. And I would not say it was necessary for my end goal to make my family proud, to help them, to be that lifeline for them. But I think that I would have made things different if I knew what it entailed. And so having someone with the knowledge of and the intricacies of the law or the, you know, the regulation in place was critical. And so it gave me peace of mind. I felt comfortable. I felt confident. I did have to go search for some signatures, but I was motivated because I knew that the end goal was to get for final forgiveness, and I achieved it. So,
how much student loan forgiveness did you get?
Full forgiveness.
Do you recall the dollar amount?
I think it was $200,000 and some change. It was even at 200.
Gotcha. On the flip side, what do you think your student debt journey would have looked like without EdCap?
I would have probably entered repayment at $2,000 a month, which is with a job in public service, it's just not sustainable. You know, I have mortgage payments, I have childcare responsibilities, payments, and other, you know, day to day responsibilities. And having on top of that $2,000 payment would have been a financial disaster for my family.
Do you think you would have gone to the private sector, if that were the case.
Perhaps that would have needed to happen, because it's not only like a burden for me, but also for my partner, who, unlike me, is not in student debt. So he was also carrying that.
Would you say PSLF has helped you get into public service, but perhaps helped you stay in public service?
I will. Yes. I think it is just solidifies my career in public service, because I no longer have that on my shoulders, that debt on my shoulders. And it has been liberating to just know that I don't have debt.
That's incredible. And I think that speaks to the importance of the program. And like you said, especially in the beginning, it's confusing. And the program has been through a lot of changes, and it seems like it's finally working for a lot of people. And that's incredible, because it'll help ensure that, you know, we have public servants.
Absolutely.
Can you tell us a little bit about your EdCap counselor? What were they like? What was it like working with your EdCap counselor?
Well, one of the things that I remember is that, you know, I felt shame, to be honest with you. $200,000, how could I have possibly gone on my debt so high? And in I felt that, you know, I felt so comfortable coming to my counselor and telling her, this is what's going on, this is my debt, how can you help me? And having someone sort of like not only help me, but educate me in the process, like counsel me about like how, you know, my debt, the interest rates, etc., and then also help me sort of like get that in order was really good. I felt safe, and that was really helpful. And I'm really grateful.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about the EdCap program, or let anybody else know about the EdCap program?
I have shared this program with everyone that I can. I think it's something that everyone can benefit from, not after having debt, but before. I think I wish that I had someone telling me what to do and what I could have done better not to get in so much debt. I was lucky, but, you know, what if I had not found you guys on time? So I am eternally grateful, and probably will be your biggest supporter ever. So
thank you. Last question here. Do you have any tips or words of wisdom for other student loan borrowers? Anything?
I would say, you know, I know that it sometimes it seems like daunting and stressful to try to figure things out, but I would say not put things to the side, or, you know, reach out for help. Organize your affairs. Make sure that you address your debt as soon as possible before getting into it. But if you are in debt already, like, try to see what programs are available for you and how you can make sure that, you know, you get that taken care of if possible, so that it doesn't affect other areas of your life.
EdCap is a program of the Community Service Society of New York, which has worked with and for New Yorkers since 1843 to promote economic opportunity and champion an equitable city and state.